Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
On today's Caped Wonder Superman podcast, it's an origin story of sorts. The fascinating events that led to an alternate version of a classic sequel.
You've seen the Richard Donner cut of Superman 2, but what ignited the fan outcry for this specific version? And how did it all happen? Today, we get the answer.
Now, the Caped Wonder Superman podcast with Jay Towers and Jim Bowers on iHeartRadio.
And welcome to the Caped Wonder Superman podcast. This is episode 32 in Detroit, Michigan. I'm Jay Towers, as always, my great friend just outside of Las Vegas, Jim Bowers. Jim, happy new year to you.
Happy new year, Jay. It's 2021. Can you believe it? Happy new year, everybody. Wow, Jay, we're in our, what, third year now?
The third season of the Caped Wonder Superman podcast. And we were having a discussion about what more can we do? What more can we find? What kind of guests can we uncover? And in just a little brainstorming, we think we really have a fantastic year coming up.
We do. And just last night, we secured another guest who we are very, very excited about. What are we doing today, Jay? We're talking to someone really, really special in the history of Superman.
You know, with the excitement around the Snyder Cut of Justice League on HBO Max this year, it is important to point out that this is not the first time fans have pushed to see a director's original vision of a film. And Jim, when we talked about our guest here, we thought, hey, when you think of the origin of the Richard Donner cut and where did things begin, this is the guy we wanted to talk to.
Absolutely. I've known this fine gentleman for so many years and never had an opportunity to actually speak to him until today. And who am I talking about? Superman Cinema's own Dharmesh Chauhan, and we are so thrilled to have him here today with us.
Hello there, Jim. Hello there, Jay. I can't believe we have never spoken. That's the first thing I have to get out of the way. Before I actually started a website, I hadn't seen Superman for several years. It'd been that long, because obviously when you go into your teenage years, and I think if my memory serves me right, I saw Superman again on TV. And I thought, you know what, I'll just go and check on the internet. And I found a website.
It was a Superman film site, though, right?
Yeah. Yes, that's what it was. Yeah. And it had information on the films. I had no idea that Marlon Brando shot footage for Superman 2, any of that. And that sort of got me interested. And I thought, you know what, I'll have a bit of a laugh. I'll go and step my own website and see if I can, you know, find out more about this. But at first, it was just, you know, a bit of fun. Learn something about web design. Learn something about the movies. And I'll probably stop in a few months. You know, I've learned something, I'll move on. There was no plan.
You launched Superman Cinema in 1997. So eBay was just 2 years old. We're still a year away from the launch of Google. Facebook launched in 2004. YouTube 2005. Twitter 2006. How do you start a comprehensive website about the Superman films without the resources that we are also addicted to today?
I think at that time, I was probably getting a few views. It's really hard to explain it because you're right. There was none of this social media stuff. I was probably doing it in a vacuum of some sort, you know, because you had no idea who was visiting. But slowly, I think the message board was a big part of it because you start bringing in the fans in.
Well, and there's instant feedback.
Yeah.
And I actually started visiting around 1998 when I got a brand new computer, and I was living in Atlanta at the time, and I had no idea if there was anything out there, and I had just acquired all that material from Pinewood Studios, and I was trying to figure out a way to get the material out there because I was absolutely astonished when I started digging through this material, and I found that picture of Brando and Chris together. Black and white, and there's Brando with his hand on his shoulder. Mm-hmm. And I'd heard something about that, and I think on Saturday Night Live, when Christopher Reeve was a host 1 year, that picture actually popped up, and I couldn't understand what that was all about. So That was the start. And then I realized, well, there are a lot of other passionate people out there, like you discovered, that absolutely adore these movies. And we were just so hungry for more and more information. And I think, like other films that we love, we were just so kind of captivated by the whole production process. How did they actually film these? How did they accomplish all of these special effects and the complexity of it all? Like a James Bond film, you know, James Bond had been around a long time, and it you know, Superman had its own unique challenges with bringing it to the screen.
In a way, Superman wasn't really well documented before then. If you think about it, Lucasfilm, they documented everything. With Superman, it ended in 1987. And the Salt Kinds in 1983. At the time, I didn't think about that at all. I just wanted to know information. But, you know, I had this question, well, why is this different? And it was answered 12, 13 years later. Basically, your website is like a museum dedicated to the Superman movie, especially Superman, the first two. Yeah, it was like foraging in the forest. I wasn't sure what I was looking for.
I wasn't sure what I was looking at, even though I had this material. I really wanted to get some help on maybe putting the pieces together, because it's a great big puzzle, like you've talked about. Putting call sheets and production pictures together, you're able to solve a lot of these Superman movie mysteries, and we still have many more to solve.
And Darmish, between Jim's photos and some of the research that you had done, at what point did you feel like, wow, there is something here, something we've never seen before?
Well, it wasn't just me. It was a chap called, you know, Bill Williams.
Yes.
But we all started getting fragments of information. I started putting it together very, very slowly. The Donner Cut really started around 2000, the campaign. We started talking about it more. And I remember that when the DVD came out, was it 2001?
Right, the DVD of Superman the movie.
Yes. I gave this letter to one of the fans, or he printed it out, and I said, please give this to Dick Donner or Tom Mankiewicz. And he kind of explained, you know, you've got to release Superman, this your version of Superman 2. I mean, we're talking about 20 years ago, so I was trying to remember everything leading up to it. But even before that, you know, we started with a soundtrack campaign, you know, with Rhino Records. So yeah, we did sort of a campaigning for that. At the time, it seemed like the most important thing in the world. But when you get older...
Well, and even before the Donner Cut, fans got together to really put together the restored international cut, Jim.
Yeah, it was 2004 that restored international cut finally came out.
Yeah, by then there have been sort of side projects, I think, building up towards it. There was something called the Green Cut, was done by professionals who worked in the film industry. So there were fans, and they had access to the equipment to make those cuts and the special. I think there was some special effects in it.
It's the first time I'd ever dealt with a fan edit or a fan project. And like you said, the guy who did it is a professional in the industry, and he had some pretty poor source material that he really transformed beautifully. If you go back and look at it, it's pretty impressive even today.
Absolutely. You can see it was a professional piece of work, but the whole intention was just to get Warner's interested or give them an indication that this is something they'll make money on if they produce it.
Well, it certainly got their attention.
Oh, absolutely, because if I remember, it was actually in Entertainment Weekly as well. They actually talked a little bit about it. So it definitely got the attention.
Yeah, it really did. And the editor said all along when he did this project, and he told me this personally as well, he was looking forward to his version becoming obsolete, because the whole reason he was doing this was to get an official version out there with more Donner footage, because by then he knew, and so many fans knew, that it was out there, just a matter of finding it. And it turns out it wasn't even in the Warner Brothers lot here in the U.S. It was elsewhere. Michael Thaw really is a hero for digging around and looking and finding all of this content, literally tons of footage that got shipped over here. I mean, I asked recently on social media fans' opinion of the Donner Cut. Do they like it better than the Lester cut? And it was really fun going back and reading that again this morning on the strong feelings people have for this second movie.
Yeah, I mean, going on, Michael Thaw had the impossible job of editing that, because he was not going to make anybody 100% happy with the decisions. He brought in Richard Donner, who actually didn't want to at first, and then eventually Richard Donner and Tom Mankiewicz got into the editing room and worked on it with him.
And again, to touch on, you know, what I said at the beginning of the podcast about the Snyder Cut of Justice League, when fans get together and really want to see something that they haven't seen before, and that movement happens, it does create something pretty special. And when you talk about the Donner Cut now in 2021, people have very different opinions, as they do on our Facebook page.
Well, they do. And when I was rereading this morning some of the comments people had made, some do say this is my definitive version. It's the only one I'll watch now. But of course, we constantly on the podcast and just general conversation talk about all this nostalgia and how much it means to us. And for some people, because they grew up with the theatrical too, nothing will ever beat it because of their memories of seeing it when they were 8 years old in the theater, for instance, or VHS or HBO or what have you. I would say the majority of people say that between the Donner and the Lester, it's the definitive version is somewhere in between the two.
Yeah, I mean, when it came out in 2006, no one had done this before. Officially, no. I don't recall. Okay, you got Star Wars, but they don't count. But I think this was the first one, and now it's become normal almost to have extended versions on DVDs of films. I think Michael Thor said he couldn't think of another film where they had to go and basically create a version from all that extra footage.
You were really fortunate during your time with Superman Cinema to do some great interviews. And one of your great interviews is with Tom Mankiewicz, because now we want to interview somebody. We want to talk to you. We want to talk to somebody overseas. I mean, we can do it just like this on Zoom. But you actually spent time with him. I mean, you were one-on-one with him the way you really do an interview.
Yeah, so how that came about was James Christie films of Richard Donner. I asked him, I'd like to try and interview Tom Mankiewicz. I didn't say Dick Donner because I thought, well, Dick Donner's answered these questions so many times. I thought, I'll speak to Tom because I think Tom is probably the most valuable member of the Superman crew. In terms of, if he hadn't written that shooting script, we wouldn't be here talking about it. So I asked him, you know, could you give me the details? So I got the details of his assistant, I think her name was Annie Stevens. And I said, I explained, you know, what I was wanting to do. And she said, yeah. She gave me the email address and I emailed Tom. And I said, you know, I've got this website called Superman Cinema. I'd like to interview you. And I had to explain what Superman Cinema was. It felt like I had to explain, like, your grandpa, what the internet was. That's how the Tom you see on the DVD extras is this Tom you hear in a private conversation. He's exactly the same. He's very, very articulate, very funny. He puts himself out there. You know, yeah. His voice is booming and it's like the old school Hollywood. So I was like, wow, this is amazing. I'm talking to Tom Mankiewicz from, you know, several thousand miles away. And we just discussed a little bit about what I wanted to do. And he doesn't need for you to lead him in to anything. He'll just start, wow. He'll just go bam, 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 bam. And all these stories. So we discussed, like, I'm coming over to Los Angeles in a month's time. Do you want to, you know, continue this talk? And say, yeah, sure. And then that was it. And then a month later, I went to Los Angeles to see the Donner Cut at Warner Brothers. And Mike Mattesino came with me as well. We watched it together. And we saw it in one of their small auditoriums. I can't remember exactly where in the department. It felt really weird because when I watched it, it's like after all this time, it can't live up to my expectations. I didn't know what to make of it. I suppose it's like when you go to you're waiting for your birthday present, aren't you? And you get it. So is that okay? I was expecting it. You know, you can't live up to my expectations. Yeah. So I phoned him up on Monday and said, look, I'm here now. I've seen the Donner Cut. Can we do this interview? And he said, yep, Thursday, 9:30. Mike hitched a lift with me because Mike Mattesino came with me because he was researching for the soundtrack, the 8-disc 2008 soundtrack, which was released by Film School Monthly. And we drove up to his house. It was this winding road up a hill. It's like old school Hollywood. We're going to this mansion and there's loads of trees around. It's really secluded as well. You're going up this hill, this winding road, meandering through the forest to his house. And we get to his house. His Jaguar is there. And he's got the famous license plate, Mank 1. And I knock on the door. Yes! Who's that? I said, it's Darmish from Superman Cinema. Remember, he got this interview? Yeah. And he's got a booming voice, like, you know, it's just, wow. It's like a hair. It flies back because it's that loud. And then he opens the door and he looked a bit worried, a bit pensive. And I found out, he told me that, you know, he's got some pain, he's suffering from some pains in his back, and he wasn't sure what it was. And I felt, well, maybe I shouldn't be interviewing him. But he invited us in. He said, just come in. And we sat down and we just recorded the interview. Straight away, he lights up his cigarette, as he does. And the other thing is, he's a big fan of Britain. And so he's got a red telephone box in his garden next to the pool, like those old lead ones. I was wondering how he got that up there, because those things are heavy.
Wow.
Because he gave me a tour of the house after the interview. He said, I want to show you something. So he took a tour. It's like something like a mahogany house, isn't it? And then he took me to his bathroom. This is where he has all the photographs of the Superman premiere. That was like an indication that he liked me, which I was hoping for.
Absolutely.
He and I used to email each other quite a bit. He always reminded me of one thing. He said, Jim, are you sending these pictures to Dick? I said, well, I don't want to overload him. He goes, overload him. Send him every picture you're sending me, because he will absolutely love these. Don't stop sending them to Dick. Mm-hmm. And he actually wanted to write my book.
Oh, wow.
Coffee table book that is ongoing. And of course, it didn't happen. But I was always very happy for you that you got that opportunity, because I don't know anybody else that did. And the fact that you were in his home had to have made it that much more special for you. And of course, made him very comfortable to just, you know, reminisce all he wanted to.
Because at the time, I had no idea that he was suffering. He didn't know he was suffering from cancer. And like I said, I didn't want to do the interview if someone's not well.
Right.
But I think he kind of livened himself up. And once he starts talking, he can't stop talking. And so we had a wonderful interview. And he was so gracious. What a nice person he was. What a nice man.
Where is the audio of that interview? Do you still have that?
It's, you know, like at the end of Raiders, there's that warehouse. it's in one of those boxes.
Armish, that's your assignment for 2021.
I'm going to find it. I'm going to try and edit it down. Then, you know, you could use it in the podcast somewhere.
Oh, we'd love that. I think there's a great deal of interest in Tom's career and his life. He was, as you know, very humble. Very passionate about what he did, and one of the most successful people or screenwriters out there. And I know he was the go-to script doctor for many years and did a lot of uncredited work. When I went to his tribute in 2011, many, many people talked about all of this uncredited and unpaid work that he did to help these producers and directors get these films made. And what an incredible legacy that he has left, as well as his father and his uncle. So the Mank name is, I've always heard nothing but positive things about those gentlemen.
Absolutely. I mean, you've been rewriting a lot of projects, and he really did want to do Superman until Dick persuaded him to actually read the two Newman screenplays. And once he had a look at them, I think what changed his mind was that the movie needed a thematic premise. He could deliver a script on that thematic premise. And I think that's what persuaded him to do it. Otherwise, there was no point in him doing it. Without Tom, like I say, we wouldn't be talking about Superman. It wouldn't be made. Simple as that. Because Dick would have walked away, I think. You know, Tom was his pal. He was, you know, he couldn't imagine anybody else could do it the way he wanted to be done. And so the purpose of what Tom brought is, you know, it's obvious, you know. He created the theme for that movie. You know, it's the movie's about the story of Christ. You know, the first image you see is God essentially sending the three villains, who basically Satan, his acolytes, from heaven to hell, which is the void. That's it. You know, the story, that's what the story is about. It's about the story of Christ. You know, you get Lois Lane, who's is kind of like a Mary Magdalene type of character. And this is where the expertise of a really good writer come in. Because, you know, we think of Kryptonite, but, you know, has Superman, who could have killed Superman. But in a way, it's actually Lois Lane. He falls in love with Lois Lane that creates the big problem for Superman, the big dilemma for Superman. If you think about it, it's not the Kryptonite. It's not necessarily Lex Luthor. It's actually him falling in love, which he's not meant to. In a way, you could think of Superman as someone who's trying to escape his parents, but he never does. You know, at the end, his father was correct. You know, he can't put one person, one woman, love of his life, he can't put her above the world. And that's how I think that's a lot of people seem to forget.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
You know, that is the heart of the story. And if he had finished Superman 2, what an incredible piece of work it would have been, that, you know, the synergy between the two. Because a lot of things that are planted in Superman 1 are paid off in Dawn of Superman 2. You know, you're talking about things like, you know, Lex Luthor's mind over muscle. You know, Superman goes in there brazenly, bashes the door down, and he thinks he's got one over Lex, and Lex is a bit smarter than him, you know. And then in Superman 2, the switch over with depowers the villains. You know, this time Superman says, no, you know, taps his head, doesn't he go mind over muscle? So there's little things like that although that survived. But you can see what the synergy between the two films and how it would have, all the setups and the payoffs in Superman 2.
Well, I think one of the most intriguing things for me is what would the ending of 2 been? And fans have talked about that a lot. Obviously, we know that the original ending for 2 was used in 1. Dick and Tom did not come up with an alternate ending, because that's another Superman movie mystery. I mean, what would that ending have been? And we could talk endlessly about that.
The thing with the ending of Superman 1, actually, I'll start with that, is that when Superman disobeys his father, you know, he said, don't interfere in human history. Now, that was obviously ADR. They added that in later, because obviously the original version of Superman, Lois Lane is not killed or anything like that. And it's actually just a lot of, you know, fantastic special effects, but there's no emotion, which I believe Richard Lester might have told Dick, Donner and Tom, you know, this is fantastic, but there's no emotion. And they decided, you know, he's right, we got to go and do that. But the thing is, with that ending, turning back the world, it drives a lot of people nuts. But I think it could have been easily resolved if Superman turned back the world or went back in time, got to the second rocket faster. If he sends that rocket up into space, but goes into a different direction, and that hits the Phantom Zone and releases the villains, all because of Superman trying to save the love of his life. That's the thing that's really missing, is the consequence of Superman's actions. Because why would Jor-El warn him? There's no consequence. He just goes back. He could do it all the time. I don't know how they could have. I think the best way would have been just to let Lois know and maybe do something in Superman 3.
Yeah.
That's what I've always said. And I remember when my wife, Sally, and I went to the premiere of the Donner Cut, and she really enjoyed it because Superman 2 is one of her favorite films. And she said, why didn't they just end it with him bringing her back to her terrace of her apartment? And she says, I'll never tell anybody. He goes, I know, Lois, I know. And just end it sort of like the end of Spider-Man 2. Go get him, Tiger. She knows. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, oh my gosh, Lois Lane knows. And she's going to keep knowing. So how's it going to start in 3? How are they going to deal with that? So I always thought that was an interesting way of just letting her know.
Boy, it's really fascinating to study, isn't it? Just to think about how it could have been, maybe how it should have been, but we are always happy with the outcome. I do want to ask you, Darmish, back to Tom Mankiewicz, because you got to spend some time with him. It has been talked about ad nauseum about some of the disagreements and things that led to a change in director, and we feel like there's just not a place for it anymore because the story's been told so many times before. But you were able to really spend some time with a guy that got to witness it all firsthand. And did you ask Tom about any of that?
I asked Tom, what did he think of the producers? And I said, what did he think of Alex? What do you think of Ilya? And what do you think of Pierre? Now we know what Dick Donner thought of Pierre Fitzwenger, but Tom gave a rather pragmatic answer. He said Pierre was basically doing what he was told. You know, he's having to take orders from Dick Donner what he wanted, and he was having to take orders from the Salkinds and, you know, what money he could and can't spend, because obviously the film production, the cost of it was spiraling out of control. And they said something like it's cost both films 70 million. I think it's north of that. I think it's closer to 100. And we will never know how much money was spent on those films. He said about Pierre Spengler that Pierre basically knew a lot more about filmmaking than the Salkinds. But obviously he was the friend of theirs, and also the fact that he was under instruction, essentially. So, and what frustrated Dick Donner about Pierre, I think, was that Pierre couldn't give him an answer. You know, he had to go back. According to what Ilya told me, he'd like to think about it for like 1 minute, whereas Dick's telling him, you know, I need this, that, I need, you know, wires for this, and I need wood for that, and whatever. And Pierre, you know, probably looking at him and kind of probably scratching his beard for a minute before he gives an answer. And I think that probably annoyed Dick Donner, because he wanted, you know, quick answers. So I think Pierre was in an impossible position. You think about the films are really, they're difficult to make. No one had made that kind of thing before. Nobody made A Man Could Fly. I think a lot of that was just the tensions of making something that was so difficult.
We'll never know the whole story. And when people want to jump on that bandwagon of knocking anyone regarding Two and the decisions that were made to get it done, I tell them, you know, we're never going to know the whole story. We weren't there. There's no way we can. We just have to continue to honor these folks. Ilya, for the idea of bringing the film to the silver screen, Alexander finding the money and getting it done, Pierre, whatever his responsibilities were, and I know they were huge. It just really is amazing that the film did get made, and it's as good as it was, because it could have gone horribly wrong. We're always trying to bring in the younger people, aren't we, Jay? These 20-something-year-olds and these teenagers. Hey, sit down and watch this movie. I think it's going to be better than you think it is. And even people that haven't seen it in a long time, I'm talking about the first film, I think they're kind of blown away. God, I forgot how good that film is. And then we've got some very loyal people in this fan base, and they're all very enthusiastic about these gifts that we have. And I think we'll continue to talk about this stuff for a long time. But I don't focus too much on talking about the whole Donner, Salkind, Pierre Spengler thing too much, because I'm just interested in so many more other aspects of the production itself.
And I want to say this too, you can't fight nostalgia. Just like I talk about Superman the movie being my earliest childhood memory, the Lester version of Superman 2 is some other child's earliest childhood memory. I work with somebody at iHeartMedia whose earliest childhood memory is Superman 4. So you can't argue with your childhood, if you will, about what movie was better, what version was better. We just live in that world where you want what made you happy as a kid. And that's what we see with these films.
Right. And that's, for instance, Martin Lakin, our good friend Martin, 13 years old, Superman 4 hits the big screen. And that's the film he has the most affection for, although he feels that the first film's probably the best of the lot. Which Superman film did you first see in the theater?
Superman 4. Yeah, I remember distinctly my uncle saying, don't go and see that film, it's rubbish. He said, but I'm a Superman fan, I have to see it.
Right.
I remember really liking it. Of course, now you're growing up, you say, well, yeah, okay, it's not a good movie, but there's a lot of heart in it, I think. You can't deny that. And I think there's a really good story in there about Superman getting involved in politics. I know Tom said that, you know, Superman shouldn't be involved in things like, you know, political ideas in defense of the film. That it is something that it's a good idea for Superman to be involved in, but he learns that he can't interfere at the end of the movie. So there's like a character arc. I'll do this for the good of the world, but in the end, he says, "I can't. That's not my decision. The decision of all the people. They have to make that decision, and I'll go with that." Something like that maybe would have worked better. Superman 4, it does have a lot of heart. I saw it at the cinema when I was 10 years old, and I enjoyed it. So I can see why Martin is, you know, it has had a profound effect on him.
Oh, yeah. And the production, the story behind the filmmaking of that movie is fascinating. And, you know, we've been talking on the podcast a lot about this 134-minute edit that's out there. And, you know, there's more material for us to see that hasn't been released yet. Superman 2 and 3 TV edits and Superman 4's full cut. That's an endless topic of discussion. When will those be released? And what more revelations are we going to come out of this when we finally see some of this footage? But I know as much as people love the Superman 2 Restored International Cut and the Donner Cut, okay, I have these two versions and I have the theatrical. You know, when are we getting the official release? And hopefully it's soon, but I have no idea when yet. But there's more. There's always more to look forward to, isn't there?
I believe they've found lots of new behind the scenes footage that's never been seen before. So yesterday you told me that there's this 122-minute cut of the Donner Cut. I had no idea.
Well, I stumbled on it on Vudu, and apparently it's on Amazon Prime and a few others, but I think it's the edit before the final version because it's got more Lester material. It's got the souffle cooking scene, a completely different edit in the fortress with Miss Tessmacher and Lex and a lot more. It's a different cut, and now people want that version. How many more versions are we going to get of two, you know?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Endless possibilities. Dharmesh, before we wrap up with you here, just want to mention that much of the Superman cinema archives can be found on CapedWonder.com, which we're really excited to check out. It's fun to kind of dive into those and take ourselves kind of time machine back to some of your archives over the 2000s. But as you look into the future, is there anything you really want to see that you haven't? All the hard work that you've done and the research, the interviews, what do you still want to see that you haven't?
I want to see more of the behind-the-scenes footage. I think that's on my wish list. I definitely want to see, because I reckon they must have footage of John Williams scoring the film. They must have. You know, yeah. How could they have not documented that? So I would love to see that. So just give me, I could watch, you know, several hours of it. I'd be happy to watch that. Jim Bowers' book. We're all waiting on tenterhooks when Warner's gives you the go-ahead to publish it. So, I mean, yes, the 134-minute cut of Superman 4, obviously.
And I'm with you on the behind-the-scenes footage. Now, apparently Michael Thaw found about 30 cans of 16 footage during the Donner years. And I think what we see in those three documentaries that were originally on the DVD, that's just a tiny percentage of what's there. So there's a lot more in the vaults. They could release two or three Blu-rays, I think, full of behind-the-scenes footage, and I'd buy them in a heartbeat.
I'm with you on that one, Jim. There's no reason why they can't do something like, you know, what they've done with the Star Wars, you know, that Kevin Burns one. Maybe there's something they could do here with this footage, or just release it uninterrupted. I'll just sit there and watch it all.
Dharmesh, what a great honor to talk to you today and kind of jump into your brain a little bit and go back to the origins. We could probably fill up another podcast of great conversation with you, but we certainly hope we will have you back on again as we get to see new things over time and get your input and perspective.
Oh, it's been fantastic to be on here. It's brought back a lot of memories because I kind of walked away from it only because I was burnt out on it. The story ended for me. I thought he had, but it looks like we're going to go back and finish it off. Actually, it's going to be Jim Bowers is going to finish it all off.
We're going to keep going, Dharmesh. And I tell you, I have to tell you on the air here that I am so grateful that you started Superman Cinema and that we had the opportunity to become friends. And I've learned so much from your site and from other fans who have so much to bring, knowledge to bring forth. And like you've talked about, the production information is so scattered. All of us as a team have really helped pull it together in our quest to find answers and to learn more about how the films were made. That's as fascinating to me as the films themselves, is how did they bring it to us. I have a great deal of respect for the fan base, and I hope that more and more people will be able to share what they know and what they've experienced. You know, Facebook continues to have people come on there and go, hey, my grandfather was the head electrician. I just got an email the other day from the guy who was a head electrician at Shepperton that watched them film all the Brando stuff. And I'm hoping to get his story. And we've got some stories from other family members of crew people, because we've lost so many people, you know.
But yeah, that's the sad thing, that we've lost so many of them. And very soon as well, after the making of it, you know, John Barry and Charles Staffel, and their works is still being remembered. So that's a great thing. But no, this has been a fascinating look back.
We would love to have you back.
Darvish, thank you so much.
Oh, brilliant. I really enjoyed it. Thanks, Jay, for hosting it.
And there he is. How great it was to talk to Darmish today. And boy, what great memories. What great stories. Hearing that Tom Mankiewicz story, that driving up the big driveway to his home, and the Superman premiere photos in his bathroom. I mean, those are the kind of stories that we just love to hear, Jim.
We do. And putting that material back on Caped Wonder recently, I hope all of you will get over to the website and check it out. There's just a little bit of content from the Superman Cinema Archives there right now, but we hope to be able to add more to it very soon. But yep, Tom's interview is there, and there's a couple of other interviews you're going to want to check out, including from Michael Thaw, and they're very extensive, great insight. But I remember him telling me all about Tom's interview, Jay, and how much it meant to Darmish to be able to go over there and visit him. And Tom was such a great guy, so humble and talented, and we really miss him a lot.
I think it was good to hear some familiar names in our podcast interview today about Superman Cinema, and familiar names that are still with us today and have been a great asset to CapedWonder.com and a great asset to our podcast.
Oh, yes. We've got some longtime friends that have been involved a long time. I think Bill Williams comes to mind first, Jay. I went back and revisited some of the Superman Cinema material just the other day, and there's Bill's name all over the place. He's written articles on there, and he's since updated them and sent them to me, and I've put them on Caped Wonder. And another big fan, Hip Hats, that's his code name, if you will. You see him a lot on there. Oliver Harper, one of our other podcast guests. He has contributed quite a bit. And one of our biggest fans, I think, Robert Gillis. I was pleased to see that he did an extensive review of the Donner Cut on the Superman Cinema website. And he's always been so vocal and enthusiastic on our podcast page and on social media. And we really appreciate him and all the thoughts and feelings that he has for these movies.
I want to say this. Our next podcast is going to be really exciting, because we're going to get some answers to questions that we have had for a long time. And that's all we're going to say. So if you've listened this far, and we think you have, we know some of the big fans of the show have, you are really going to be excited about this upcoming podcast, and know that we are going to ask all the questions that you've been asking for years. And we're excited about that, Jim.
We are very excited. And let's just say that this gentleman, none of us have heard from in a long time, and he's still around, and he's got a lot to say that I know you're going to want to hear. And we've got a lot of great questions for him, don't we?
It's not Dick Donner. He's working on Lethal Weapon 4, or is it 5?
It's 5.
It's Lethal Weapon 5, as he should be. We can't wait for that.
Well, he wants to direct, and I wasn't sure if he wanted to direct this or not, but he's 90 years old and still charging, and he's told me that he's got his mind on that 100%, and we know that Mel and Danny are ready to go. So yeah. Provided the studios in the sound stages and all are ready to go too, I hope they get it going within the next few months. I wish him well, because I can't wait to see it. That's one of my favorite movie series.
Hey, I'll be happy if he throws in a Goonies 2, and I'll be set.
Goonies 2?
Yeah, come on.
We're talking about that a long time. What would you do, though? I mean, they're all, you know, Sean Astin is what? He's 40-something years old. They're all in that age range.
Like all the other, you know, all their other reboots, Jim, you know, they're parents now with kids of their own that want to go exploring. Why not? One-Eyed Willie returns.
There you go. And don't you love that that T-shirt? That what's his name?
Oh, he's no longer with us. But yeah, the super you're talking about Sloth.
Sloth, there it is. I even saw a Sloth action figure not too long ago.
Yeah,
I mean, there is so much devotion to that movie.
Well, I mean, it's everything you love about what Richard Donner does in films. I mean, it's adventure. It's done just right, and even a couple of bars of the John Williams Superman theme, right?
And Richard Donner's in the movie.
Yeah, he's on the beach at the end.
He is. He has at least one speaking line, I think.
See, now we're on to our next podcast. Listen, everybody, thank you so much for listening as always. And check out CapeWonder.com for all the updates. And, of course, our Facebook page and we will join you again in a few weeks with a very exciting episode. That is all for today. Jim, we'll talk soon.
Hey, thanks, Jay. Thanks, everybody. And stay super.
You've been listening to the Caped Wonders Superman podcast on the iHeartRadio app. Jay Towers is a Detroit TV anchor and morning radio host on 100.3 WNIC Detroit. Follow Jay on Instagram and Twitter at Jay Towers. Jim Bowers is the founder and editor of CapedWonder.com, the home of Caped Wonder Superman imagery. Follow Jim on Instagram at Caped Wonder and on Twitter at Caped Wonder Jim.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.